Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, whose allergies have been under attack for the last couple of weeks. I don't know if I'm the only one, but I figured it was pollen, since pollen has always been a culprit ever since I was a kid. But then I learned that it could be an early hatch of fungal spores in Michigan. Bridge Michigan's Emilio Perez Imbarguen reported on this story and explained how a University of Michigan study revealed that seasonal allergies caused by this fungal mold are happening 3 weeks earlier than they used to happen some 20 years ago, not just in Michigan, but nationwide. According to the Bridge Michigan story, fungal spore allergy season, when airborne spores give humans itchy eyes, stuffy noses, and sneezes, tell me about it, arrived about 22 days earlier in 2022 than in 2003. A monitoring station in St. Clair Shores observed the season creeping earlier by a few days each year, shifting the onset of the season from early July to mid-June over the course of the 20-year study. So the reason for this early arrival of fungal spore allergy season, everyone, is, yes, climate change. One in five Americans are harmed by these fungal spores, which, by the way, would be a good name for a band. And these spores do have some benefits in our environment, no doubt, but their early arrival because of climate change is due to our warmer and possible wetter summers that we're going to be having in the future, according to these researchers. So those of us dealing with the allergies, celebrate. So that means more Americans will now have to purchase, you know, nasal sprays or steroids or some kind of allergy medication to deal with this new problem that will stick around for a while longer as well. Oh, but that's right. Millions across the country and thousands in Michigan will lose that ability as their Medicaid is being stripped from them. And of course, there's that entire big pharma drug industry that makes those medications for some reason expensive to begin with. So, hey, things are looking better for all of us, aren't they? Speaking of fungal spores, MAGA Republicans in Congress are working, as I am recording this week's show, on speeding through their MAGA murder budget. And as of this recording on July 2nd, the MAGA murder budget hasn't yet passed the House. It did pass the Senate, as Vice President J.D. Vance from Ohio had to cast the tie-breaking vote, doing exactly what his billionaire benefactor Peter Thiel, the former PayPal CEO, paid J.D. Vance to do, which is give he and his tech bros more money and more power. He doesn't care about the working class. I don't care if he did write a book about it. He didn't care. He's forgotten about them. He made his career thanks to Peter Thiel. So J.D. helped give all of the big tech bros out there and all of corporate America a huge tax break. I posted on Twitter this week that there was no chance the Republicans were never going to pass this bill. Because first and foremost, the bill's primary reason, the bill's primary responsibility, the bill's primary job is to ensure that the corporate oligarchs get more money. And what we are witnessing with the MAGA murder budget is three things. One, a total and complete plundering of the working class safety net. Two, the complete redistribution of wealth back up to the oligarchy. And three, a complete and unconditional surrender to the Chinese Communist Party. Wait, what, Pat? What are you talking about? Okay, well, I cannot take credit for that last part. That idea was hatched by the American Prospect's Ryan Cooper, and it's something I agree with. And he wrote an outstanding piece right after the bill passed the Senate, which, by the way, so-called moderate and serious Alaskan Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski voted in favor of. Well, anyway, Ryan Cooper's piece is titled, "Is the Republican Party a Chinese Conspiracy Party?" You know, that really hit on something that has always been troubling me when it comes to the MAGA Republican Party's war on clean energy. Like, In my congressional district, MAGA Republican and Trump fanboy John Molinar has been on this crusade to stop a California EV battery company whose parent company is Chinese-owned from setting up an EV battery plant in Big Rapids. This is something that I've talked about before here on the show, and Molinar doesn't want the communist country, as he says, having an imprint in his district. Now, of course, you know, companies like Dow Chemical and DuPont, they deal with China all the time, but I guess he doesn't really care about that. Again, we've talked about this Goshen plant here on the podcast in the past, and that's still, that whole thing is still being fought in the courts for a myriad of reasons. But John Molinar's not against the plant due to, let's say, pay concerns for potential workers or anything trivial like that, no. John Molinar claimed always, has always claimed that he's against it because of the Chinese, which of course gives into all kinds of this anti-Asian hate speech and everything else. I mean, he could look again at how workers will be affected, potential workers, but no, he didn't want to do that. He chose the anti-Asian route to begin with. But another reason John Molinar is against this EV battery plant is because it was a clean energy manufacturing plant. And rather than help America become less dependent on fossil fuels, John Molinar is out there advocating to have absolutely nothing for people in his district to do. No jobs whatsoever. Well, I mean, that and it'll also do whatever fossil fuel lobbyists tell them to do. And that in turn will help China even more while America wallows in the past. I say that because I remember reading this quote from a staunch opponent of the plant in Big Rapids, and her name is Lori Brock. She's made quite the splash in right-wing media circles during the last 2 years. And she owns a horse farm, which is close to where the proposed plant would have been. And when asked during a recent Michigan House committee hearing about the Goshen plant and the possible jobs that could have been created in her area, she said, and I quote, "Our community is a rural area. We are recreational. We are not an industrial zone. Why they would come there is beyond my belief, because there's Flint, there's Detroit, there's other areas that want the jobs, that need the jobs." Huh, that's interesting. Really? I mean, Big Rapids doesn't need jobs. The unemployment rate in Mikoska County is, 6.6%, which is above both the state and the national average. Some 18% of Mikoska County's population lives below the poverty line. But this Lori Brock says the good people of her area don't want jobs. I just want to point out, and especially for people like Lori Brock, that I probably would have voted against the state handing out $175 million for the plant. Not that I'm against the plant or that I'm afraid of some Chinese takeover, some Chinese conspiracy, even though the company is based in California. I would have voted against the funding because the guarantees for workers were not etched enough in stone for me, especially in terms of pay and benefits. And again, I sort of am not all fired up about giving out corporate welfare to corporate companies and even for ventures that I tend to agree with. It doesn't mean I would vote against them. It doesn't mean I'd be against any kinds of subsidies all the time. But you know where I stand on that issue. Now, a couple of Democrats in the state Senate voted against funding for that very reason. They felt like workers were not being protected enough. But you see, investing in clean energy wasn't one of the reasons why those Democrats didn't vote to okay the $175 million for the plant. You see, China is destroying us in clean energy and leaving us flapping in the wind, all thanks to this MAGA mindset in the Republican Party that staying stuck with expensive, inefficient, and environmentally and health damaging dirty coal and dirty oil energy of the 20th century is the only way to make America great again. It is such insane kind of thinking. I mean, going back to the past is what MAGA is all about, which is why they don't want women voting and why they want to erase any kind of history related to civil rights, slavery, queer rights, and more. So it's no surprise to me that they want to take us back regarding our energy supply. But that's what my Republican Congressman John Molinar has always been about. You see, one of John Molinar's top campaign contributors are people who work for or represent the Miller Energy Company. I got this off of OpenSecrets.com. And that Traverse City-based company specializes in oil and gas exploration. By the way, another one of John's main sources of bribes, campaign contributions, is the right-wing Israeli super PAC known as AIPAC. And I'm sure John's all about handing over billions of dollars to Israel's corporate right-wing government instead of being Michigan or America first. But hey, that's a discussion, I guess, for another time, isn't it, John? Molinar and all of his MAGA Republican colleagues in Washington are about to damage Michigan and the country's exploding clean energy job market, all because oil and gas people line his campaign pockets, the same as they do throughout the MAGA Republican Party. I mean, it's exactly the same as when oil executives visited Mar-a-Lago last year and ensured that they would give Dear Leader Trump's campaign around $1 billion, and I'm sure they never asked for anything in return, right? Well, getting back to that Ryan Cooper piece in the American Prospect, he details how the MAGA murder budget will levy a devastating blow to the clean energy industry. Listen to this one paragraph. Fortunately, a couple of truly mind-bendingly awful provisions were taken out while accelerated depreciation, a business tax break that solar and wind have had access to since 1986, ends in this bill. A tax on solar and wind production was removed, while tax credits for those technologies will now expire within 12 months of enactment rather than in September. These aren't just Biden-era subsidies, by the way. Some of them have been around since the 1970s. Essentially, solar and wind projects would have to be under construction in the next 12 months to qualify for the tax credits, but those projects would also have to be in service by the end of 2027. Wow. So as Cooper notes, this will lead to a number of clean energy projects just drying up, with companies knowing the well is soon going to dry out. So why would they even get into it? Why would they even start? Ah, but there are new and big subsidies for coal. And let me just mention, a lot of the coal produced in the US of A is exported, which means it will go to countries such as India and China so they can use that coal for dirty and cheap steel production there. Well done, USA. This reverses many of the clean energy gains we have been making here in our country thanks to President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. And yes, as Cooper notes, while there were some problems with the REACH technologies of that bill, such as like hydrogen, that didn't mean that we had to give up and we can't improve on all that in time. But not only that, the IRA helped make the United States self-sufficient in solar panel production, and solar energy, by the way, is the cheapest form of energy. Here's another paragraph from Ryan Cooper's story. Now, China is already far ahead of any other country when it comes to green industry. It installed 277 gigawatts of utility-scale solar last year alone. America has installed just 121 gigawatts total. That gap is scheduled to grow exponentially this year. China has built 41 gigawatts of offshore wind. America has built a measly 174 megawatts, that is about 0.4% as much. The electric vehicle share of the Chinese new car market is soaring past 50%. Last year, America's was 10%. China's high-speed rail network, built basically from scratch in a decade and a half, makes American transport look like the ancient and decrepit relic it in fact is. So that's where we are. But as Ryan Cooper notes, at least we were trying to compete. All right, we were trying to compete with that. We were trying to move forward. Last week, I had the pleasure of talking with Darrell Slaughter, who is Michigan's Policy Director for Climate and Energy with the Natural Resource Defense Council. And Darrell talked about how it made perfect sense to move forward with our clean energy agenda in America, considering how the marketplace is helping dictate that agenda already.
You have seen the cost of renewables, solar, wind, and battery storage as well, drop significantly. There was a time, you know, last decade and before it, where the argument was, well, these sources aren't cost competitive with coal, you know, with fossil fuels in terms of providing electricity. That is not the case. Renewables are absolutely cost competitive with coal. And I think you are right to your point. I think that's why you have seen utilities on their own start to really look or really invest in renewables there. We can talk about even, you know, Lansing Board of Water Light locally here. You know, we shut down the coal plant and moving towards gas, which that's a whole nother, issue. But I think recognizing that coal is not as cost competitive and recognizing the value of renewables, battery storage, energy efficiency, which is, I think, a really sorely underutilized resource. You know, we could be doing more to make our homes more energy efficient so we're not having to build these huge plants. But it's the way things have been moving for, I think, probably definitely even seeing this movement over the last decade that renewables have become cost competitive of fossil fuels.
I mean, so thanks to Republicans like my Congressman John Molinar, Lisa McClain, Jack Bergman, Bill Hazenga, Tom Barrett, Tim Walberg, and hey, we cannot forget John James, who's running for governor next year. Not only are MAGA Republicans gutting environmentally improving clean energy projects, but they're gutting jobs. They're gutting clean energy jobs in Michigan. Michigan ranks sixth in the nation in clean energy jobs. Sixth. The sector employs over 120,000 Michiganders, according to a Department of Energy analysis last year. But thanks to the MAGA murder budget, a tax break on clean energy that was in place for nearly 40 years will be vanquished thanks to the MAGA murder budget. And don't forget that Republicans tried to even insert a tax on clean energy companies, but that had to be scratched from the Senate version. The MAGA murder budget will phase out hundreds and hundreds of clean energy projects, projects that would have helped massively in terms of energy generation, but also in terms of our nation's economy. A repeat analysis estimates that we will now lose some 770,000 jobs, costing our gross domestic product in the country over $900 million in losses. 770,000 job losses resulting in over $900 million in losses. And as clean energy founders Michael Thomas noted, the MAGA murder budget will raise electricity rates by 5% in Michigan. Hey, well done. This bill is really for the working class. Michigan and so many other states, by the way, are also giving the green light to expensive and energy-sucking data centers so Google and Microsoft can set up shops. So these will drive up energy costs while not creating many jobs either. Maybe now would be a good time to increase our clean energy investments, you think? You think? And we haven't even gotten to the public health byproducts that we will now be experiencing by putting more coal, by putting more polluted fossil fuels into the air. The MAGA murder budget isn't just devastating to the future of the country's economy. It's devastating to the personal economy and well-being for working-class Americans. But look, everybody, on the bright side, Republicans are doing their best to help the Chinese dominate the United States in this industry. I mean, that means MAGA Republicans, with their MAGA murder budget, are putting China first? Oh, and let's not forget that the Goshen company that tried to build that EV battery plant around Big Rapids, Michigan, yeah, it gave $1 million to Trump's inauguration. I'm sure John Molinar is really upset about that one, right?
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audioboom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
By the way, I told you about the backwards and insane mindset within MAGA Republicans in terms of decimating the clean energy movement throughout the nation. Well, Michigan MAGA Republicans in the State House are trying to virtually do the same. Michigan Public Radio reported recently how a MAGA Republican bill in the State House would place this kind of arbitrary cap on solar energy in the state at 20%. 20%? What? So that's government trying to tell businesses what they can and cannot do. Small government Republicans? Michigan Democrats last year passed that clean energy bill to make the state 100% clean energy in 15 years. But Republicans are trying to block that. Oh, and they love to block where solar arrays can be installed because they love our power grid being stuck in the same place where it was when Leave It to Beaver was on TV. And speaking of MAGA Republicans playing games with budget, the MAGA Republican House, led by House Speaker and man baby Matt Hall here in Michigan, they failed to produce a general budget. Now, they did release an education budget that guts public schools and the free meal program, for instance, but Matt Hall failed to get a budget presented by the July 1st deadline, which is a law in Michigan, although I guess you can skirt it naturally. And if nothing is done by September, the Michigan government will shut down, which is exactly what Matt Hall wants. This isn't how one should govern. This isn't considered seriousness. I know the Lansing media intelligentsia out there called this the serious negotiating party, that the MAGA Republicans are always the serious party. But it just shows that you can't negotiate with a party that's built to please its rich and elite donor base. That's radicalism. And here's Democratic State Representative Natalie Price from the 6th House District. And that's where Southfield, Royal Oak, and Berkeley are represented. She made this little video from her social media on July 1st after Matt Hall and the MAGA Republican nihilists waved off that July 1st deadline.
All right, here we are. It's 9:30 p.m. We adjourned, blew past the statutory deadline for the budget. Because the Republicans were unwilling to be transparent, unwilling to compromise, we have nothing. Medicaid isn't funded. Food assistance isn't funded. Our schools aren't funded. We know that we can do better, but without reasonable compromise and willingness to negotiate, it leaves us in a really tough spot. So there was nothing for me to vote on today. I am hopeful that when we come back, we will be in a better place to keep fighting for Michiganders. And in the meantime, again, I'm going to keep showing up, doing my best, and refusing to vote on a budget that does more harm than good.
Matt Hall and the MAGA Michigan Republicans in the House are simply using the very same playbook that we're seeing Mike Johnson and the MAGA Republicans in Washington use. Do whatever it takes to appease the rich, the elite, the untouchable donor base, a.k.a. the oligarchy. You can always contact me via email, leftoflansing@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, and the Gram. Next week, I'm going to talk with Ivan Diaz, who is a Democratic socialist and who's running to become the Democratic nominee for Michigan Senate District 29. Mr. Diaz is also a former Kent County commissioner, so I am looking forward to speaking with him next week, and I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about, and I'll ask him what the victory of Zoran Mamdani in New York City showed him and what kind of progressive messages and platform will he present to the people of his district that other Democrats who might be running for that seat aren't doing. So that will be happening next week. And I'm sure when we talk again, the MAGA murder budget will come up, since this is going to hit Michigan hard once it is passed, if it didn't pass already by the time you're listening to this. I want to play this clip, if you don't mind, real quick. I want to play this clip from Fox News featuring the always batty Maria Bartiromo, acting all giddy about the upcoming private sector jobs report, which I guess she thought was going to be a glowing report. But just listen how this all goes down. And I have to thank Michigan's best progressive fighters out there for putting this online. And I'm talking about the Still Social. So thanks, guys. All right, here's the clip.
Talking about this bill leading to growth in the economy. We are waiting any moment now to get the jobs numbers for the month of May. The expectations call for the ADP numbers to be up 95,000 for the month of June, rather. It's the June jobs data. And we'll, of course, right now seeing the number actually show a decline in jobs, down 33,000 on ADP. The bill includes $25 billion for the Golden Dome, the missile defense system. Mm-hmm. Senator, you introduced a bill supporting the construction of that system. I want to get your take on defense and whether...
I just love how Bartiromo tries to slyly switch the topic once she announces that the economy lost 33,000 jobs over the last month. And one more note, too, I made. She then switches to that congressional representative there saying, okay, well, you are going to ensure that a lot of money is going towards the military. Which is funny, because I thought Dear Leader Trump and Elon Musk said that they were the anti-war people and that they were going to cut down on Defense Department spending. Anyway, are we surprised by all of this? Are we surprised that jobs are being lost? Are we surprised that the Trump regime is doing the exact opposite of what they promised their voters that they do? The ridiculous and damaging across-the-board tariffs, pissing off Canada and gutting the public sector, it's all turning upside down on us. And let's also mention how the Trump regime continues its purge of brown people in the country, most of which are working in this country and who help pay taxes, even though they don't benefit from those taxes themselves. I mean, that's hurting small businesses. It's hurting farmers across the state and the nation. I mean, we're watching masked ICE agents kidnap residents in Michigan now. And the MAGA murder budget is gutting rural hospitals so that way they can pay for ICE detention facilities and pay for more ICE personnel to terrorize our communities. The economy, which was already stacked against the working class, is turning more and more against the working class that keeps getting squeezed and squeezed some more. That putrid jobs report happened before MAGA Republicans robbed the working class again with their MAGA murder budget. When MAGA Republicans and Dear Leader Trump, let's just go back in time, right? Remember when they passed their tax cuts for billionaires back in 2017? We were promised that jobs would be plentiful and that the billionaires would trickle all their largesse down to the little people and that prices would drop. Has that happened? And now, after greedflation practiced by most corporations since the pandemic, Trump and the Republicans are saying, hey, let's give corporations more tax cuts. Don't punish them. Let's reward them with more tax cuts. All right. Now, we know, as many of us predicted, that corporations would keep those tax cuts rather than investing them in new ventures. I mean, corporations use that money for stock buybacks, and workers continue to get exploited. So, this MAGA murder budget, as I stated earlier, was written primarily to funnel money away from the working class and then give it to Donald Trump, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Michigan's own Betsy DeVos. That's who MAGA Republicans work for. And we're seeing it right in front of all of our faces as MAGA Republicans place enormous cuts in Medicaid and SNAP benefits. Now, a MAGA Republican congressman from Wisconsin named Derek Van Orten, well, he tweeted the following, and he said, the president of the United States did not give us an assignment. We're not a bunch of little bitches around here, okay? And Detroit Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib succinctly responded by saying, yes, he did, and yes, you are. She's good with that Detroit trash talk. And Rashida gave a good speech in front of the Capitol building ahead of all this voting on the MAGA murder budget, in which she explained how her constituents and millions of others across America are being forced to experience pain, misery, and terror, and maybe even worse, thanks to the MAGA murder budget.
This is going to be the largest transfer of wealth from poor working people to billionaire class. When I see statistics that say the 0.1% is going to get close to $300,000 in tax breaks, while our families again are going to be struggling with this broken, inhumane healthcare system. You all know Medicaid is already just a Band-Aid, and they're about to rip it off. You know who's calling my office? It's not just the seniors and working class families. It is also parents of special needs children who tell me that, yes, they have insurance that helps their children survive, but Medicaid helps them thrive because of the wraparound services that Medicaid will cover, but their private insurance company doesn't. This is the story that is completely missing. They will tell you over and over again, we're not cutting it. It's a complete lie. I'm so tired of them in there telling me. I got a media outlet in Michigan telling me that my colleague says rural hospitals are not going to close. What the hell are you reading? Who is telling you this? These are nonpartisan organizations that are telling you the truth, that hospitals will be impacted. Because we're talking about 17 million of our neighbors. All there embedded. Of course, we're talking about Medicaid and food assistance. But look what they're trying to do and making profit off of ripping our families apart. You know, in my city, I just saw them ripping our families apart, coming in, like completely like dehumanizing, vilifying my immigrant neighbors. And they're all doing it because we know, and I read Representative Escobar's op-ed, you can see how it's tied to the for-profit detention centers. You can see that it is a shift to the billionaire donors that give him money. You can see it. There's nothing beautiful about the shift or cutting people off of food. There's nothing.
So my aforementioned Congressman John Molinar will vote for the MAGA murder budget. He'll vote for it even though it'll hurt the people in this district. He'll vote for it even though it could lead to the deaths of some of his constituents. Last winter, Molinar explained why he was all for the work requirements to qualify for Medicaid during a virtual town hall, as reported by WCMU. This is what Molinar said. He said, "I think it's important in our economy that people, able-bodied people, work. It's good for them. It's good for our economy as well, and that would be a condition of receiving Medicaid." Of course, John didn't really want to have a real town hall because he couldn't even stand to face his constituents, considering that the majority of them are against the MAGA murder budget. Anyway, here's where things get a little confusing and a little tricky for me, and maybe John Molinar can riddle me this. You're going to punish and belittle and put onerous demands on working class Michiganders from your district because you feel like they just aren't working hard enough for you. Okay, you know, a couple of thousand of your constituents could have been working had you not spent time working up their fears and been a good little boy for your oil and gas buddies by blocking the Goshen plant around Big Rapids. Thousands of people could have been working there. So how are people not working hard enough for you, John, if you are at the same time blocking them from working? And another question for you, John, and all of your fellow MAGA Republicans who support the MAGA murder budget out there, why would you place additional costs on the state to belittle working class people? When Trump and former Governor Rick Snyder enacted work requirements for Medicaid coverage during Dear Leader's first term, it led to 100,000 Michiganders losing coverage. 100,000. And then there's that whole thing of wasting the state's resources to make Michiganders jump through hoops to get coverage. Which leads me to this astonishing exchange between Massachusetts Democrat Jim McGovern, who is the minority leader on the House Rules Committee, and Kentucky MAGA Republican Brad Guthrie arguing about the MAGA murder budget's work requirement. Just listen to this.
So the other is people that are not eligible because of eligibility rules, and the people that are able to work. It was 4.6 million. That number is of people who are estimated that were able to work. And we say able to work, it's people based that it, all the ones that you talked about with mental health, with all the other, they're exempted out, people with substance use disorder.
Well, according to the Joint Economic Committee, 184,526 people will lose their health care coverage in Kentucky. Are they all deserving to lose their health care benefits?
So I would say if they're able to work and choose not to work, when I say under the restrictions that we have for eligibility, most Kentuckians think, I know there was some criticism that came out from the governor's office of our bill, but if they're defending people that are able to work
that's
an
awful lot of people in Kentucky. Ranking member.
Well, Paul, Kentucky has one of the lowest workforce participation rates, people who are eligible to work that are working, and they'll be better off if they're working.
I want to make just one statement before I go to Mr. Colon. This notion that, you know, all these millions and millions of Americans really are living the easy life, you know, staying home, watching TV, and being on Medicaid, and being on SNAP, is ludicrous. A food benefit that's on average $2 per meal for an individual. I mean, it's just like, it's so offensive to people in this country. I don't know whether you talk to your constituents who are on Medicaid, but I'll tell you, I mean, their lives are oftentimes very, very complicated. And I think that just part of why this bill is so unpopular is because people think you're talking about them.
I agree that people have complicated lives, and you said it, and that everybody fits into a neat category. But it doesn't make sense to let people there are a substantial number, according to studies, of people that are receiving Medicaid that could otherwise be working. That's why we were very careful to sculpt provisions where people that are on substance use disorder, right. People that are mental health, they're all exempted. People with dependent child at home.
Living through the last 24 hours and watching the machinations of the United States Senate trying to add things, take things out, move things around, using the words very careful don't seem to apply here.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, you see, MAGA Republicans despise and they look down upon the working class. These clowns actually believe having Medicaid is some kind of a luxury. And what would they know? I don't think they have to worry about their health care. And in my district, where Republican Congressman John Molinar supposedly represents, 18% of his constituents are on Medicaid. And he's going to sell them out. He's going to sell a few thousand of them out because he's got to give Elon Musk and Donald Trump theirs. 20% of Lisa McClain's constituents up there in the Thumb region are on Medicaid. but she'll sell out thousands of them just for her dear leader. Hundreds of thousands are projected here by the state to lose their Medicaid, and rural hospitals will shutter because of the MAGA murder budget. They lie when they say, oh, no, nothing's going to happen. Yes, it is. It always does. And despite the bill being massively unpopular, MAGA House Republicans, along with every Michigan Republican in Washington, will vote for it because it's what their corporate masters and their dear leader demand of them. So, yeah, they are his little bitch, and they are corporate America's little bitches. But say what you will of the MAGA murder budget, it's doing everything that Trump and MAGA Republicans promised you that they would do. And they promised that they would go bold for corporate elitists. They weren't ever going to go bold for the working class. It was all about major tax cuts for the corporate donor base. So when and if Democrats get back into power, what will that mean? Will they go bold and not just in trying to recover these working class losses, but will they call for a return of the corporate tax rates before 2017? They never did it during Joe Biden's first couple of years in office. And will they at the very least propose a public option for Obamacare? We're seeing how quickly everything can be ripped away. And that means maybe it's time for Democrats to go bold the next time they get into power. And that will mean a lot when it comes down to who will be the leaders of the Democratic Party. Will they go big or will they go incremental change, which has gotten them and has gotten the American people into trouble? Now, I feel like Michigan Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin prefers the latter. I think she prefers incrementalism. And she gave a speech last week outlining how centrist Democrats can fight back. And I'll have more to say on that coming up in the Left of Lansing Last Call. You're listening to LOL.
He enjoys watching sporting events from years ago. He can recite most of the 1984 Detroit Tigers lineup. He will go to the mat in saying Michigan has produced some of the greatest music in the past 60 years. But most of all, he enjoys the loyalty of a fine dog while sipping on a tasty Michigan beer. Oh, and he loves talking about politics, if you haven't been able to tell yet. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need more Pat? Visit and subscribe to leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat.
Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. As promised, I'd like to take the next couple of moments here talking about the speech that Michigan Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin gave at the Center for American Progress last week. And that's where Slotkin called her speech the Economic War Plan and how she believes Democrats can best reach working class voters, something that we've been talking about here. Now, Slotkin started her speech by saying the following, and I don't think I can disagree with her diagnosis of what we learned from last year's election. Listen.
And if the election in November told us anything, it's that it's not just Trump voters who are frustrated with the government. It's Americans across the board. As a senator from Michigan who just won on the same ballot as President Trump, I've seen this frustration firsthand. Michigan literally invented the middle class, the very basic idea that you could work at an auto plant and afford the car you were building. But today, Michigan is also a place where people feel like it's harder and harder to get in and stay in the middle class. Let's take my town of Holly, Michigan. It's full of people who aren't doing as well as their parents and their grandparents. They can't provide for their kids what was provided to them. Dad worked at the Ford engine plant and could afford a fishing cabin up north, but his son can't afford one. Dad could take his kids to Disneyland, but the son can't take his kids on vacation. Down the street from Holly is Flint, Michigan, where it's gotten harder to get in the middle class in the first place. And this is the thing that many Democrats have, quite frankly, lost touch with. When you can't provide for your kids, you feel anger, you feel shame, you lose your dignity, and you look for something or someone to blame. That anger, that suspicion among Americans, that right there is what I mean by an existential threat.
So we are in agreement on Slotkin's breakdown of the election, and I've always thought that we did lose the working class vote because many Democrats lost touch and lost track of the working class as they tried to appeal to the corporate class during the last 30 or 40 years. But if I had one little quibble with Slotkin there, it's saying over and over middle class. I say the working class, those who are on Medicaid and those who have private insurance. We are all lumped in together. We are the working class. Those not in the top 2% are not in the working class. and the working class is the class being exploited. Now, this leads to a point the senator made on how Democrats can win back voters, beginning with this point on wealth inequality. Slotkin says that Democrats should always support small businesses, and I think that is a no-brainer. However, the senator then said this.
The flip side of this is the first sacred cow I want to slaughter. Too often, Democrats fail to make the distinction between small businesses and the largest multinational corporations. And because of that, many Americans hear us as plainly anti-business. And while we're on the subject, too often as Democrats, we have the habit of vilifying success. Yes, we want everyone in America, including the President of the United States, to play by the same set of rules. Yes, we need a fair tax code to ensure all Americans are paying their fair share. But this is America. No matter who you are or where you come from, Black, white, Latino, first generation, if you play by the rules, we want you to be wildly successful.
Now, the problem there, Senator, is that for too long, the game keeps getting rigged for the corporate class, just as we're seeing with this MAGA murder budget. The working class can't start a business because Washington is beholden to always, always do whatever its corporate donor class tells them to do. And even more, if you are nibbling around the edges about corporate greed while chastising progressives at the same time, then I think you're misdiagnosing the problem there, Senator. It is the oligarchy, the corporate authoritarian class that's damaging the entire working class. That means small business owners. Yes, small business owners, workers, students, and on, they are the ones losing as the oligarchy gets more powerful. And if you are failing to say the word oligarchy or how the Trump regime is fascist, then you're losing the messaging game. If anyone should know better about the power of messaging, I would think it would be you, Senator, who touts your work at the Pentagon during the W. Bush years. Messaging is very important. You cannot send mixed messages, not in a war, like, you know, being one of a handful of Democratic senators who voted with MAGA Senate Republicans to pass a corporate cryptocurrency bill that only pleases Dear Leader Trump and his crypto fascist benefactors. You point out stopping Congress from these crypto schemes, but then you voted to give big tech a huge victory by passing that so-called Genius Act, an act that allows Trump's family to keep building their crypto dynasty. Anyway, the senator said this part regarding climate change.
The way some Democrats approach climate change is elitist. You're either with us or against us. In the 2000s, climate change was a theoretical thing, but today it's here in the form of extreme weather that is disproportionately hitting middle-class pocketbooks. By continuing to use climate change as a purity test, we're excluding people who are now inclined to join the cause. We need to meet people where they are. People get that extreme weather is a pocketbook issue. Let's start from there and try and bring as many Americans into the cause as we can.
Now, obviously, if you've listened to the opening monologue this week or listened to past shows, you know I'm pretty big on finding ways to reverse climate change, to reverse rising energy costs, and using clean energy to build up new jobs and a new economy. And as much as I wanted to give the senator grief for her climate change purist remark, I get it. I do. I mean, we're not at the place yet to get rid of natural gas. And yes, it is a fossil fuel. I get it. But it does seem like we do reach more people when we talk about climate change on more of an economic level. So I kind of agree with her there. Like the energy siting law, where farmers can make money allowing for large solar projects on their farms, and where those projects can then lead to major infrastructure improvements for their hometowns. I think that's a good idea. I mean, we should point out how climate change is costing us in severe weather, which Florida is experiencing the most, but so are we here in Michigan. Using economics to explain climate change is a decent way to go. I don't argue that. So I'm with Senator Slotkin there. However, when she became the only Democrat to vote with MAGA Republicans on using the federal government to block states from enacting their own emissions rules like California and 14 other states did, that's not meeting people halfway. It's not helping working class Americans. We're trying to get a polluter pay bill passed here in Michigan, and that's sort of bypassing the weakness that's coming out of Washington, that's coming from the federal government. We back those kinds of causes here in Michigan. And yet Senator Slotkin said, no, the federal government knows better. It's pleasing the oil and gas lobby, not to mention the big three automakers. And Senator, are you saying that your colleague, Michigan Democratic Senator Gary Peters, doesn't have that same sage-like common sense that you supposedly have? You say we should direct the climate change discussions towards the economy, but yet you blew up your argument by causing more pollution throughout the country, which ends up hurting the country in a myriad of ways, be it in public health, environmentally, and yes, economically. However, I will close with this part of her speech that I do completely back.
If you want to know why all Americans are furious about the price of healthcare and nothing ever changes, it's because of this very ugly reality. Lobbyists and corporate PACs donate a lot of money, and then members of Congress feel beholden to protect those industries. And that has real life consequences for middle class Americans on healthcare and on everything else. That's why a key part of my economic war plan, which undergirds everything, actually, is taking action to regain the trust of the American people. We need a full-on ban of corporate PAC money. I am one of six senators who has never taken corporate PAC checks. Six out of 100. Beyond that, we also need to ban members of Congress from trading stocks and cryptocurrencies so Americans know politicians aren't personally profiting from their access.
If Senator Slotkin is really serious about this, then count me in. However, she did take $10 million from the aforementioned crypto lobby. But if she's truly going to make this her mission from now on, then count me in. The senator says that she agrees with Zoran Mamdani's argument that Americans feel squeezed and that everything is unaffordable. But then she says she disagrees with some of his solutions. I'd love to know where she disagrees with him, but I don't think I'm grasping when I say that I think it's more about going more of a bold route that he's advocating rather than an incremental route that Senator Slotkin is pushing.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
That'll do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. I'll post a link to Senator Slotkin's speech so you can hear it for yourself. And hey, tell me what you think of it at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Next week, I will have Democratic candidate for the state Senate seat number 29, Ivan Diaz. And that is around the Grand Rapids area, by the way. Plus, I will have a Friday short on July 4th explaining why I am flying my American flag and being all patriotic, because I am not going to allow the fascist to take my freedoms away from me and my love of my country away from me. Please be safe. Have fun this holiday weekend. Chill out. Have a hot dog and a beer, a good beer if you can. Until next week, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.